Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. Joining me from North America is my regular partner from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, the NFL is back and it delivered the usual array of wild comebacks, controversy, spectacular plays. I mean, we had it all again in week one, as we seem to every week.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal week of football and capped off last night by that incredible Chargers-Cards game. You know, this game is so fan-friendly now with so many great offensive players. They're scoring like they never have before. If you're a defensive guy, it's a little bit disconcerting, but wow, what action.
Yeah, we start to see, I think, around the NFL. We're going to dig deeper into the games, look ahead to week two, of course, answer your questions in the mailbag, and really just maybe look at some bits that catch our eye. And Jeff, one thing, first of all, I mean, this is a new NFL. I guess this is the way it's going. Tom Brady had 56 pass attempts. Joe Flacco had 62 pass attempts. Jay Cutler had 49. These kind of numbers aren't unusual anymore, are they?
No, they're not. And with the way the rules are and the way the athletes are, this is just what's happening now in the National Football League. And, you know, the old deal about, you know, run on first down, run on second down, throw it on third down, that's a long time ago now. And this is now a pass-first league and quarterback-driven league and a league of tremendously skilled athletes with some rules changes in the last 5 or 10 years that have really opened up the game for the offenses, and I think it's good for the fans.
Yeah, we're very excited that the season is underway. You can follow the season, of course, on Sky Sports on television. You can get yourself to the games at Wembley Stadium as well. 3 games there at the end of September, the end of October, and the first week of November. And there are still some tickets available for those games. Teams have returned some tickets. We expect all 3 to be a sellout, but you can still get them. So go to NFLUK.com. For more details on that. Jeff, we will get into looking back at week one, discuss some of the issues that came out from that, and then make our predictions for week two. But we can't really start anywhere else than the big news. Ray Rice was suspended indefinitely by the NFL after more video emerged yesterday of the incident, the assault on his then fiancée Janae Palmer at an Atlantic City hotel in March. This video was... Well, it was pretty disgusting, to be honest. And then Ray Rice was, of course, a Pro Bowl running back, was cut by the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, did that video leave the NFL or the Ravens any other choice?
Well, I don't think so. And I think that the thing that people got to understand, this is not an NFL issue. This is a societal issue. Mm-hmm. And there's no place, certainly in the National Football League, for that level of, you know, any level of physical violence against a woman, and domestic violence is an issue at every level of our society. And I think the NFL, just like if it was IBM or, you know, the Globe and Mail or any other organization, you have to take steps when you're confronted with this kind of, you know, as you said, disgusting video and disgusting behavior. And you know, it's a sad state of affairs, and you know, again, I commend the NFL for, once that video became available, for doing it, and the Ravens doing exactly what they had to do, which was, you know, take away his opportunity to be a professional football player. It's a privilege, and it's not a right to play in the National Football League, and I think that is something that these young guys got to understand.
There's obviously lots of speculation who saw what and when, and to be honest, at the moment we would be speculating, so we won't touch on that. When the NFL saw the video, when the Ravens saw the video, the fact is that, you know, whenever it's been done, the right decision in my mind has been made. But Jeff, take us into this from a coach's point of view, because you see players all the time. They might have they might get various things, various misdemeanors, various things that come up in their personal lives. I guess at some point, and you've been coaching for 30 years, so you might not care to admit it, but you must have at some point had players where you say, do you know what? If you're not helping yourself, I can't help you anymore. And this looks like that's what, you know, the Ravens stuck by him in training camp and in the off season. But with the emergence of this video, you know, this is an example of, well, I can't still stick by you and sort of save any of my own face.
Well, I think that's there's a moral responsibility that you have ultimately, and obviously you want to stand by your players, you want to stand by your employees. You know, that's I think that's good business. Mm. But when the evidence is so shocking and so damning and so disgusting, there you have no choice but to, you know, just eliminate that player, that employee's opportunity to work for your organization. It goes that way. It should, and it should go that way for players, coaches, equipment guys, anybody that's. Remember now, people got to understand we're human beings first.
Yeah.
Right. What we do is not who we are. How we act is who we are. Mm. And when your actions, you know, are in that insidious, then you lose your opportunity to be a football player, to be a professional football player. You can talk all you want, and I listened to Qadri Ismail this morning talk about the NFL should have done this, the NFL should have. That's, again, his opinion, and that's all speculation. Until you know, you know, I'm not going to say who was right and who was wrong, but when that TMZ video came out, the only thing that the league could do and the only thing morally that the Ravens could do was remove that player from that locker room. And interestingly enough, Neil, you saw some of the interviews yesterday, and I think that was the sentiment again in the locker room, because I don't think the players had access to, obviously, to that kind of, you know, video, certainly.
Yeah.
And you know, there is just no place for that kind of behavior. None, not any. And it can't be, you can't rationalize it away. You can't excuse it. It's just, you know, it's our responsibility as a league, and you know, in the Ravens' responsibility as a franchise within the league to stand up and say no. And you know, I think I commend them for doing it and doing it really fast.
Well, and I think we've both had experience of this. You've had it because you've coached guys over a number of years. I've been fortunate enough to meet and travel around with players. Those players won't want to be associated or tarred with the same brush as Ray Rice. We've spent time on the road traveling up and down the UK with people like John Sullivan, Harrison Smith, Kyle Rudolph, you know, Mark Brunell when he came over. Great guys who are a credit to the NFL. And so there are more guys like that in the NFL who are a credit to this league. And, you know, they wouldn't want to be seeing somebody like Ray Rice get away with what he did.
No, absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about guys with wives and guys with daughters and guys with mothers. And, you know, hey, there is no excusing it. No level of alcohol in your system. No level of, no matter how the woman may have incited him or whatever, you can't rationalize that behavior away. And I think that one of the things that is really difficult sometimes is that, you know, you've got 2,000 NFL players, and the vast majority of those guys are good guys. Mm. The vast majority. And I, like you say, I've coached for 32 years, I guess it is, this year, and probably 25 of that has been in pro football. And my experience in pro football has been that well over 90% of the guys are good guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just that when these kinds of things happen, unfortunately, it does tend to paint the entire league with that brush. And that the fans need to understand that that kind of behavior is not, it doesn't go on every day in every locker room. And you know, it's just, it's sad and it's unfortunate. But, you know, it's a little bit of a microcosm of our society. And that, you know, I think here's what I took away from it, Neil, is that it's, you know, kind of strange way, if you will, it's good that it happened. It's good that it come out. Certainly not good, that incident that it happened.
No.
But it brought attention to something that is not an NFL issue. It's a societal issue.
Yep.
And, you know, that can hopefully help people wake up to the fact that you cannot lay your hands on another person, and certainly you cannot lay your hands on a woman.
One other thing I'd just pick up on, just to round off on this, Jeff, you just mentioned, you know, this applies to coaches, equipment guys, assistant coaches, and I agree with you on that. And I'm not talking Ray Rice here, I'm talking generally. I think possibly everyone who works in professional football should be held to a higher standard, or not necessarily held to a higher standard, but should act accordingly. Because the fact is, if you retired from your position tomorrow, there'd be a long line of coaches who want to take your spot. If I walked out of the TV studio tomorrow night, there'd be a long line of people wanting to do what I do. So that word you use quite a lot, privilege, it does apply to everyone who works in this sport.
No question about it. And, you know, it's incidents like this that hopefully wake guys up to the fact that, hey, you know, I may have been born with a tremendous amount of talent, and I've worked my tail off to mine that talent, and I've had opportunities that other guys maybe didn't get, but I'm not special. I'm just privileged. I'm just blessed to have this opportunity. And so, as you say, you know, to sit in the studio with you and Kevin and to do those games all through from, you know, the playoffs and then on to the Super Bowl, that to me is that's an honor to work for Sky Sports. And so you recognize, and just like it's an honor to work for the Canadian Football League and to work for the National Football League, you have a responsibility to that position to maybe, and like you say, maybe it's a higher standard that we have to hold ourselves to, because, you know, not everybody has the opportunity to do these things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One other piece of news, Jeff. Robert Mathis is out for the season with a torn Achilles. Actually, a bad week for torn Achilles, because Derek Johnson and Mike DeVito, defenders for the Kansas City Chiefs, also went down with torn Achilles. They're done for the year. Mathis was working out on his own in Atlanta. Of course, he's serving that 4-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. There goes the best pass rusher on the Indianapolis Colts on a defense, which, well, it got shredded by Peyton Manning on opening night.
Yeah, I mean, this is really tragic for the Colts, because Mathis, you know, certainly you're looking at an elite pass rusher, and it was tough enough that they had to lose him for 4 games, but now to lose him for the entire season. You know, it's interesting, Neil, when you've been around this game for a long time, it's kind of like injuries kind of run in cycles.
Yep.
And, you know, it's 1 year it's naviculars, 1 year it's, you know, ACLs. This seems to be the year of the Achilles, because, as you mentioned, there's a number of guys that have had their seasons ended already because of Achilles tears. We just had our starting defensive end go down, you know, wasn't even hit, just planted to make a tackle and blew his Achilles in the game in our game on Sunday. So this is a tough game on your body, and you know, that's what makes it so difficult over a 16-week schedule to play at a high level, because you know you're going to get injuries. And,
yeah,
that, you know, it's tough when you get them when they're on the practice field. It's even tougher.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs of the human body, but, I mean, is Achilles, I mean, Vince Wilfork had that last year. We're talking here, the three I've just mentioned, big, explosive players. So I don't know if that's a tie-in.
Well, I think part of it is, you know, that these guys are so finely conditioned and so strong. And, you know, the tendons and joints of your body are the things that take those stresses. And, you know, whether that's your knees, and, you know, it's like Vince Lombardi had a quote, the knee, always the knee, right? And, you know, in that day and age, it was the knee, because the knee, you know, injuries today, the ACLs and like Clowney's meniscus tear.
Yeah.
Well, had that been 1968, you know, he may never play again.
Yeah.
Right. The medical side has come so far, but still the body is a finite thing and can only take so much stress. And this game stresses the body to its limit.
One thing I noticed, Jeff, in week one, maybe we can look, instead of looking at game by game in week one, because we will need to make our predictions in week two, just some big positives and big worries to come out of opening weekend. I would just say, actually, the preseason to regular season, you can't take everything that happens in the preseason too seriously. Look at the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills were booed off the field, right? Booed off the field in the preseason. Yeah. They go up to Chicago, where they've never won before, and they get the win.
Yeah, you know, and you look at San Francisco, they look like they were totally in disarray on offense and come out and just, you know, played really well against the Cowboys. You know, that's exactly right. You know, the preseason is the preseason. Yeah. And the tendency is, with all the media attention now and the fans, you know, having access, so much access, total access, and and Hard Knocks and all those things that you can really sink your teeth into preseason football. You got to understand it is preseason, and you're trying to get certain things done during preseason. I was really, really shocked at that Bills-Bears thing. I think the Bears are really down the stretch. You know, when we start getting into October and November, they're going to look back on that Buffalo game and go, "Oh my gosh, we let one slip away there." Because that is a tough one to lose at home to a team like Buffalo.
I made a couple of quick notes, and I'll just give you my positives, and then I think you weigh in with your positives and negatives. So, big positives, I had Miami's line play on both sides of the line against the New England Patriots. They got Tom Brady on the ground 10 times in the second half, 4 sacks. I think Atlanta and Detroit offenses looked fantastic, which is great news for us, Wembley Stadium. Vikings defense was very good with Mike Zimmer. This is a team that's always been that sort of soft zone, sit back and let you make the play and we'll tackle you underneath. And they were much more aggressive. I know they were up against Sean Hill and then Austin Davis, but, you know, they played their part. So, Jeff, they were three positives for me. I mean, the things that drew your attention in a good way in week one.
Well, I think, first of all, watching Matt Stafford.
Yeah. Right?
And I think you can see the Caldwell influence a little bit in Stafford. He's a much more efficient quarterback. I mean, he has phenomenal ability. And you know, the one where he got out of the pocket and kept the play alive and then
classic Big Ben, that
long one early. Yeah, you know, I thought the Lions themselves were a big positive because, you know, we've always felt like the Lions had talent, but, you know, they just had that self-destruct mode, you know, with their undisciplined penalties and those kinds of things. It's early. Mm. And if you're a Lion fan, you know, obviously you got to be pleased with the start. But they've had good starts in the past. Now can they sustain it? But I think that's a positive. I was impressed with San Diego's defense last night.
Yep.
You know, I think San Diego, that again, what a tough way to open in Arizona, you know, in your division on the road, your first game. But I thought their defense really got after it last night. And I think that's their offense. They've got offensive weapons. So I was impressed with them. You know, again, how can you not be impressed with, you know, what Seattle did? I know they're the Super Bowl champions and everybody talking, but I mean, I thought that they just really, really showed that they are the class right now. And, you know, the Packers are a good football team and they just took them apart.
A couple of players who were, you know, making plays on those jet sweeps and catching passes. They're very different in stature, but you look at Percy Harvin and Cordarrelle Patterson, you know, so for Seattle and Minnesota respectively, they caught the eye, Jeff, as well, because they're those kind of players that you wouldn't necessarily label them as a wide receiver or a running back or a slot receiver. They are just playmakers.
No, and there's no question about that. And you know, when Minnesota drafted Patterson, I was a little skeptical because he just didn't have that body of work that you look for.
Yeah, just,
you know,
one
he played
year
in junior college. Really only played 1 year at Tennessee, and you know, it was a very rough pass route runner, but just such a dynamic player that what they've done really well in Minnesota with him is kind of give him things that are easier to do early in your career.
Jeff, big worries. I've got written down in front of me, big worries from week one. Chicago Bears run defense. Stop me if you've heard that one before. The Kansas City Chiefs generally losing at home in that way to the Tennessee Titans. And I would worry about the Ravens offense. I mentioned Joe Flacco, 62 pass attempts, just that one long touchdown pass to Steve Smith, but they were out of sorts for much of the day against the Cincinnati Bengals. Those were things that worried me. What about you?
Well, I think, you know, I feel the same way about the Bears, although I'm not surprised by it because that was such a problem for them last year. And you know, they did some things in the off season, but obviously not enough things yet to shore up a defense that was, you know, maybe the worst in the history of the franchise. You know, if you're a Rams fan, you have to have real concern, I think, too, you know, with their quarterback situation. You know, Sean Hill, and you know, how many games are you going to win with Sean Hill at quarterback for you? You know, I know they're going to try and run the ball and, you know, control the clock and do all those things, but that's, you know, that's a hard way to win in today's NFL, and so that's a concern. You know, surprisingly enough, I'm not all that concerned about the New England situation. I think that the cream will rise as they go through the season. Obviously, that's disconcerting for them to go down and get pounded like that in Miami. But again, the other one is the Packers defense. Are they going to be good enough on defense to win that division, first of all? And you know, that division is going to be so close. I don't know if a wild card team can come out of there because they're going to beat each other up. So those are areas to me. And then, again, look at the Giants' offense. It has been bad during preseason. And Eli looked, to me, his footwork was he just didn't look comfortable. He looked out of sorts. Again, there was just no real flow to their offense. So I think the Giants have to be concerned about, you know, their overall performance, but certainly their offensive performance more than anything.
Yeah. Jeff, moving on, just one thing you just mentioned there a few minutes ago. You said, we were talking about the season, you said, look, it's early. And one thing we do, we've waited so long for this NFL season to start again that we react. We react so quickly and so strongly. And I've listened to a couple of podcasts already who said, well, Denver and Seattle are on a collision course for a rematch in the Super Bowl. This is, as you quite rightly point out, it's a long season. So what are coaches doing this week? Because, I don't know, maybe take a team like Jacksonville. They were a 17-0 up on the road against Philadelphia. They lose 34-17. So you have to, if you're Gus Bradley, take the positives from that. Is it a case of...
Well, yeah, and I think...
You got to try not to get too high or too low.
Yeah, well, I think here's the thing. You know, each individual situation is different, right? So, for example, if you're Gus Bradley, you're trying to turn a program. So you're looking for all the positives you can find because you're trying to build belief in those players that they can win, that they can finish, that they can, first of all, that they can compete with the elite teams. Mm. And you know, you have to look at the Eagles and say that's a potentially elite team in the league. Well, you're up 17-0 on them. So you build on those positives and then recognize that, you know, and I think Gus is doing a phenomenal job there. And, you know, if they can continue that way, they'll knock off a few people along the way and they'll start to build traction in Jacksonville, which I think is what they need to do. Now, if you're in a different situation, say, for example, Mark Trestman in Chicago, you've got to look at this now and you got to get your team back up and ready to play because, you know, you can focus on the run defense and it wasn't good, but, you know, Marshall wasn't outstanding. They have a lot of yards of offense, but getting the ball in the end zone is the bottom line in this business. And so, Tress has got a little bit of a different challenge in that he's got to kind of rally the troops a little bit. You're always riding a tightrope, and I mean walking a tightrope, rather, of offense, defense on a football team. And so those offensive players, you know, they watch the game too, and they see and they listen and all that. So, you know, they're looking at this and they're going, you know, we're good enough on offense. What about those guys over there on defense? Can they get that thing fixed?
Does that, Jeff, does that force Jay Cutler to, I mean, that throw he made where he's rolling to his right, throws back across the body, picked off by Kyle Williams is a risky move. And also you could extend that out to Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys. Romo took some chances with the football and he got punished for it with 3 first half interceptions. If you have a bad defense, do you take more chances on offense?
Well, I think there's a tendency for you to do that because you begin to press because you believe that you have to score every time you have the football because you can't stop anybody. And that's a easy thing to fall into. But it's also a vicious cycle because typically what happens is exactly what you just said. 2 quarterbacks that are 2 of the better quarterbacks in the National Football League made bad decisions trying to force throws. And I'm sure a lot of that comes from the fact that they feel like they've got to score every time they get the football because their defense can't stop anybody. Mm. We're going through a season like that right now where we started 3 different quarterbacks because of injury. Well, our offense is struggling to score points. Well, that forces the defense to press and think, God, we can't give up anything because if we do, you know, we can't win. So that's a very, very difficult situation. And so every coaching job is tough, but each coaching job has its uniqueness. And again, like we say, Gus has got a challenge. Mark's got a challenge. Andy Reid's got a challenge to get his team off the mat again. Jim Caldwell's got a challenge because he's got to keep his guys focused and you know, he's got to inoculate them against the success flu. And, you know, it's coaching is, it's a job now. I mean, you're part psychologist and part, you know, animal trainer.
Jeff, can you tell me or explain to me how players can spend 6 months getting ready for a season? I've seen the work they put in training camp, and I saw this guy in particular work his tail off in training camp when I was out there. How they can prepare for 6 months and then Dez Bryant spends most of the opening weekend on the sideline battling dehydration?
Well, you know, dehydration is an issue in the Dallas Heat, first of all.
Right, so they trained out in California for a start.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and this is one of the things that because they expend so much energy and they sweat so much that, you know, it's your body has a finite amount of water in it, moisture in it. And so one of the things you're constantly stressing to your players when you play in, you know, arenas like, you know, Cowboy Stadium and in that heat and in humid areas is you got to start hydrating not on Sunday. You better start hydrating on Thursday. And, you know, some guys don't take care of them. And I don't know if that's the case in Dez's case, but a lot of guys don't drink enough water. I mean, and don't pay attention to that. I know that, you know, when you fly, when you go on the road, one of the things that our people do is we hand out, you know, liters of water to the players and make them drink it on the plane because they don't want to do that. They'd rather drink soda or whatever they drink, but it's the water that you need, because those other things with caffeine, those caffeinated drinks, they actually work against your body's ability to retain moisture.
One last look back at week one, Jeff. Mike Wood in the mailbag says, do you guys have an MVP of week one? Lots of standout performances. Was there one individual performance that made you say, wow, that was impressive?
For me? For me, man, you give me that guy down in Houston.
Yep.
Right?
He was awesome.
And I'll play some defense. And whatever, you know what? There's a sports talk show guy over here, big guy, Colin Cowherd. And he went on a rant last week about how in the world could they pay J.J. Watt that kind of money. He said, I wouldn't pay J.J. squat, much less the money he got. And I thought to myself, well, I hope you are eating every word and you enjoy it, because that guy was a machine.
Jeff, he had one sack. I'll give you the numbers. He had one sack. He had another sack wiped out because he forced RG3 into an intentional grounding penalty. He had a blocked extra point. He recovered a fumble. He knocked down a pass. And get this, he had 7 quarterback hits in one game.
So again, you're talking about a guy, one guy.
This one man
that had a game that most defensive line, 4 guys or 3 guys, would like to have.
Yeah,
you hit the quarterback 7 times. That's a pretty good night getting after the quarterback. We're talking about one guy, one man, making those plays. I think, you know, again, I'm so happy for him because he is the kind of guy that you want, a guy that is relentless in his preparation, takes care of himself, does things the right way, and pay those guys. Don't pay those other guys.
I read a great story this week after that performance by J.J. Watt, and they were talking about Bill O'Brien went into the Houston facility in the summer. I think it was in June. He was keen to get started on work. One of those coaches, I know the silly hours you guys keep. He drove into the building at 4 a.m., walked past the weight room, and in there was J.J. Watt working out in June. At 4 o'clock in the morning. Incredible.
Yeah, and you know what? I think every player should get as much money as they can possibly get because they have such a short lifespan in this business. But to the organizations, to the clubs, to the personnel guys, you just want to say, hey, pay that guy.
Yeah.
Pay that guy because he's going to make all the other guys around him better because of the way he works. Don't pay. It's so frustrating to me, Neil, when I see these guys that get big money and they just don't take it. Hakeem Nicks. Now, there's a case in point right there. Hakeem Nicks has had a hard time keeping himself in shape since he was in college, and yet you go out and throw millions of dollars in his pocket and think he's going to change? he's going to get more. You know, yeah. What does that mean?
Well, you really want your JJ Watt.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No, you want players on the roster in Houston to see what JJ Watt does, to see how he's been rewarded, and to make sure that they get the same sort of rewards.
Right, and that's exactly right. And you need those guys. You need guys like that, because then every young kid, and this is where Clowney, this is the hope I have for Clowney, is that he's smart enough to go into that weight room and see the way that J.J. Watt works and recognize that that's what a pro does. That's what a guy that wants to be the best that's ever played the game does. He doesn't work at a every player level. He works at a special level. And Clowney has been given by God unbelievable talent. Now, will the work ethic, will he learn to work by watching the guy next to him? And I, you know, I think that's the great hope that certainly all the Texans fans have, is that, you know, boy, would that be a dynamic duo.
All right, Jeff, let's move on to week two and our predictions. We'll just briefly look back at last week. You went 9-7. I had an absolute nightmare and went 7-9. But as you told me last week, it's a marathon, not a sprint, my friend. So it's not
that's
time.
That's right. It has a way of evening itself out, my man.
Exactly right. Let's take a look at the games in week two then, starting on Thursday night on Sky Sports. And you can follow the CBS pregame show from 12:30. Kickoff is at 1:30 a.m. It's Pittsburgh at Baltimore. Baltimore normally do so well at home. Jeff, I'm going to start us off on this one, and I'm going to say that Pittsburgh take this one. I like what I saw in Pittsburgh's offense for much of the game.
Yeah, I'm going to take Pittsburgh, and I think all the stuff that's been going on in Baltimore this week, it's going to be hard to be a focused football team.
Yeah, let's move on to Sunday then. Our main game's on Sky Sports. We're on Sky Sports 2 HD from 5:30 p.m. We've got Atlanta at Cincinnati, and then we've got Kansas City at Denver. But let's start on the week two slate of games on Sunday. Miami at Buffalo. I like what I saw from Miami. I like what I saw from Buffalo. I just like the Dolphins. I think they've got more talent, although the Bills normally match up pretty well against the Dolphins. I'm going Miami in this one, Jeff.
Yeah, this is a game that really has taken on some interest. You know, this is not one that when you looked at early in the schedule, you'd say, well, that's one I want to watch that game. But I think I really do want to see both these improving teams play. But I'm going to take Miami to come up to Buffalo and get a win.
Okay, both going Miami there. This is a good one as well. Detroit at Carolina, an early test for the Lions offense, because the Panthers are still very, very good on defense. Depends on Cam Newton playing as well. Of course, Kelvin Benjamin was impressive. I'm going to go Detroit.
I feel the same way. I think Detroit has a better overall football team. And, Megatron against that, you know, young secondary for Carolina, I think that's going to be the key in the game.
Moving on to Atlanta at Cincinnati, some good matchups in week two. How do you see this one going, Jeff? Who do you like here?
Well, it's hard for me to go against the Falcons as well as they play to start the season. I'm a Mike Smith fan, so I'm going to take the Falcons.
All right, I'm going to go Bengals at home. I think they're strong at home, so I'm taking Cincinnati in that one. New Orleans at Cleveland. I thought Brian Hoyer showed some signs of life, but I think the Saints are still a talented team, even though they lost in week one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, Patton's done a great job there. They're a much different Cleveland team. But, you know, New Orleans has an awful lot of good football players, and I look for, you know, the defense to bounce back in week two, so I'll take the Saints.
This is an interesting one. New England at Minnesota. So Mike Zimmer did a good job with that defense. New England have got to go on the road for a second week in a row. I am going to pick New England to win this one because they don't very often open 0-2. But this is a challenge for them, isn't it?
This is a huge game now, because for the Patriots to go 0-2, now that wouldn't be the end of the season, but I'm going to tell you that would put you in a deep hole in the National Football League. And I just don't see the Patriots playing poorly 2 weeks in a row. I think, you know, their offensive line is in transition right now. Zimmer's bunch is playing much better, but I just really think that the Patriots will bounce back.
The Arizona Cardinals at the New York Giants. I'm going to go Arizona. I do worry about the Giants. I'm picking Arizona on the road.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think the Giants are really struggling right now.
And Dallas at Tennessee. I've got worries about Dallas. I mean, Tennessee are one of those teams we never really pay much attention to, are they? But they, I'm probably going to pick Dallas to win on the road.
I'm going to take Tennessee. I think Tennessee's showing some signs and, you know, new staff, new direction, and Jake Locker playing better than he's ever played in the National Football League. I think he can do that 2 weeks in a row, particularly against that Dallas defense that struggles.
Jacksonville stay on the road against the NFC East. This time it's the Washington Redskins. More expected from RG3 and the Redskins, of course. Jacksonville showed some signs of life. I'm going to take Jacksonville to win on the road.
I do too. Again, this is maybe a little bit of a sentimental thing, but I certainly, you know, big Gus Bradley fan and big fan of what they're doing in Jacksonville, so I'm going to take the Jags.
Seattle at San Diego is the first of the late games. I think Seattle showed their class again. I'm going Seahawks.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, this is not going to be easy. Yeah. That Charger defense is much better, but I just don't know, who's going to. You look at football teams, and I'm going to tell you what, the Seattle football team is a good team, top to bottom, defense, offense, special teams, they got it all.
St. Louis at Tampa Bay, Bucks didn't show a huge amount of offense. They got it going late on. I'm going Bucks.
I'm going Bucks. Lovie going back to St. Louis, and I think I think this will be their first win under Lovie Smith.
Kansas City at Denver looked like a really good game going into the season. I was worried about Kansas City after last week, but I'm going Denver on this one.
Denver, and it's good to see my man Emmanuel Sanders getting in tune with Peyton Manning. That's a scary combination right there with Julius Thomas outside.
Absolutely. Jets at Green Bay. I'm going Packers to win at home, level up their record.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the Jets just offensively are going to struggle, although they can run the ball a little bit, and they're going to try and run it a lot against Green Bay, but I just think that Green Bay at home, this is a game for them.
J.J. Watt at Oakland. I'm going J.J. Watt.
You know, my Raiders are killing me, man. I tell you what, that's going to be tough duty. But, again, I agree with you. I think that Watt and Houston will go into Oakland and win.
All right, two more. The Sunday night game, Chicago at San Francisco. I think the 49ers, with all that emotion, opening their new stadium. I'm going San Francisco in that one.
Yeah, and I'm gonna tell you something now. This is why that Buffalo Bill loss looms so large, because you got to go on the road to San Francisco in week two, and you don't want to go to 0-2. But I'm afraid San Francisco's just got too much for the Bears.
All right, last one, Jeff. The Philadelphia Eagles at the Indianapolis Colts. I think Philadelphia woke up in the second half. I worry, I'm a massive Andrew Luck fan. I worry for the Indianapolis Colts at the moment, so I'm going Philadelphia in that one.
Yeah, I agree. Philadelphia, better talented football team, play better defense, and have a ton of weapons. So I'm going to take Philadelphia on the road.
All right, Jeff, that's all our predictions. So you've got a two-game lead. I'm just going to do one quick question from the mailbag to finish us off, and then we'll get more questions next week. Quick question from Doc Scott. Says, does Percy Harvin's being in the offense a lot more for Seattle mean a return to the Super Bowl? So we've said about how it's early days yet, but tell us about the impact a healthy Percy Harvin could have all season long.
Well, when you look at the Seahawks, when you studied the Seahawks last year, the thing where they were deficient was big plays from the receivers, right? Big guys that had the opportunity to make huge plays. Now, Harvin is that X factor, and we talked about this as they were getting ready for the Super Bowl. We really felt that Harvin could be a key in that game, because when you get the ball in his hands, regardless of how it gets in his hands, whether it's on a kick return like he had in the Super Bowl, whether it's on a fly sweep, whether it's on a reverse, whether it's on a screen, whether it's on a post route, the guy has the chance to take the thing the entire way, to as the players say, to make a house call. Well, that, when you factor that in now with Russell Wilson and beast mode at tailback, now that is the extra dimension that, that the Hawks didn't have for most of the season last year. And they won a lot of football games, 17-13, those kinds of games. Now they have the ability to, if they get into a game that's a scoring contest, that they've got weapons to continue to score and get up into the 20s and 30s scoring. And that's going to make them really, really tough to beat.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly a dangerous weapon. Jeff, thanks very much, mate. Enjoy week two. I'll speak to you next week. All right, great stuff there. That was Jeff Reinbold. Actually, just one more question I'm going to take from the mailbag. Tom Marshall asks, what was your favourite play of week one? Tom's was Steve Smith on that long touchdown run, throwing Pac-Man Jones to the ground. That's hard to go against. I'd stay with the same game, actually. And the immediate response from the Cincinnati Bengals, AJ Green with the 77-yard catch and run from Andy Dalton. But it was that kind of weekend. There was so much action, so much to digest and to talk about, and it will be the same again in week two. So we look forward to having you back next week. This has been NFL UK and SkySports.com's Inside the Huddle. It's a USP content production. Make sure you enjoy those games in week two, and we'll speak to you next week. Until then, it's bye for now.